Hello and welcome back to the Britain Unarmed in the Early Middle Ages podcast. This is episode 51, Gaelicisation. Welcome back to the show. I hope you enjoyed our 50th episode Q&A. I've so far gotten positive feedback on the end of the show and starting a new show. Hopefully that transition will go fine. Before we begin the episode proper, I'd like to remind you all to follow me on Twitter, where I'm at BritishistPod. This is especially important now, as I'm using Twitter as my main vehicle to explore the transition between shows. Also, please join our community Discord server, which I'll link, along with everything else, in this episode's description. If you have money spare, please consider making a monthly donation to the show via Patreon. The lowest tier of donation costs half the amount of a coffee each month and makes a big difference to my ability to produce the show. I know it may seem like a bad idea considering we're ending the show in late August or September, but remember I've still got to research Arndt, and having Patreon money spare will help me fund the new show. However, if you want to, you can refund your donations at the end of the show and get that month's donation back. No matter what, I'll be closing my Patreon between shows, so you won't have to pay while nothing's getting published. Anyways, you can also make a one-off donation to the show via PayPal. If you donate more than £2.50, you will also get a shout-out on the show, like my patrons do. Now, let's get on with the episode. We left off last time with a discussion of the early Christianisation of Scotland, specifically Ninian. However, Ninian isn't really the face of the Christianisation of Scotland. We'll now get to the really big figure in Scotland's Christianisation, St Columba. Apatodomnon of Iona, writing over a century after Columba's lifetime, shows the saint travelling into northern Picland and doing the usual saintly missionary stuff. He performed a few miracles, converted a few people, and did some baptisms. One of the major figures Columba baptised was Emcath, the commander of a Pictish war band in Skye. However, despite being a common presence at the Pictish court, Adomnum doesn't record Columba baptising Bridie, the king of the Picts. Usually in saints' lives books, this would result in the monarch being cursed. However, it seems Bridie and Columba had a perfectly amiable relationship. Columba was treated with honour by Bridie and preached freely. In Adomnum's account, either Bridie was already Christian when Columba arrived at the court, or he was stubbornly pagan despite Columba's preaching. Bede, however, differs from Adomnum's narrative. He claims Columba, and I quote, "turned that people to the word of Christ by his word and example." Naturally, the people includes their king. Bede goes on to say that Bridie gave the island of Iona to Columba. That fact is pretty indisputable. The main thing Columba is remembered for, to many people, is founding Iona. Either he was given the land, or no one minded when he took it. Whatever the specifics, by around 600 Scotland was thoroughly Christian. The church, however, took a different form to that in the rest of Christendom. It didn't take the form of a single monolithic institution with a strict hierarchy. Instead, the church took the form of a patchwork of different monastic and priestly structures. This allowed it to adapt to the local circumstances and contributed to the rapid spread of Christianisation over Scotland. The Scottish Church also had influence over Northumbria, when, in 616, King Aethelfrith in Northumbria was killed, his sons fled to Dal Eata. In their exile, they were exposed to Gaelic Christianity. This meant that when one of his brothers, Oswald, reconquered Northumbria, Gaelic Christianity came with him. Northumbria would be addled by conflict between Gaelic and Orthodox Catholic Christianity until, during the reign of Oswy, the Catholic Church ran out. If you want more information on all that, I did an interview with Stephen from the History of Christianity about the very same subject a while ago. That's the Christianisation of Scotland done and dusted. It's now time to get into the lifeblood of most history podcasts, politics and warfare. Specifically, let's talk a bit about Dal Eata. The first king in Dal Eata that historians are fairly certain existed was Domangart, who ruled the Kintyre Peninsula for 5 years before his death in 506. It's worth noting, at this point Dal Eata was a mess of clans and fighting, for the High Kingship. Dormungart was succeeded by a son, Comgall, who was followed by another son, Gabbran. We know literally nothing about Comgall apart from his name, so let's skip to Gabbran, who actually does some stuff. Specifically, he lost the first fight between the Gaels and the Picts. The Irish annals record the following. A flight before the son of Maelcon and the death of Gabbran, son of Dorengard. The son of Maelcon mentioned his brood, a powerful Pictish overking who controlled the lands between the Moray and Orkney Islands. Considering the power difference, it's no wonder Gabbran died. Why did he even fight in the first place? Well, the Scots could have been colonists looking for new land. Maybe Gabbran controlled some Pictish territory and brood wanted to take it away from him. There's evidence that Gabbran's mother was a Pictish noblewoman. It's probably the most likely cause was purely a raid by the Scots, which didn't go so well. A weird thing about Gabbran, considering he died in battle, is that he seems to have been popular within his family. Within a few generations, the family adopted the name Kenel Gabbran, or Gabbran's kindred. However, the Kenel Gabbran weren't the only powerful Dariartan kingdom. There was also the Kenel Loan, who controlled land north of that of the Kenel Gabbran. After Gabbran's death, the throne of Kintyre passed to his nephew, Conall. The only thing we know about Conall's reign was that he raided the Inner Hebrides and he died in 574. Following Conall's death, the throne of Dariarta passed on to Gabbran's son, Aedhen. As we talked about last episode, kingship was much lineal, so the throne passing like this wasn't unusual. However, judging by Aedhen's later character, it's equally likely that he took it by force. There's evidence of a violent takeover in that a battle was recorded in Kintyre 2 years after Conall's death, in 576. In the battle, Conall's son died along with many followers of the sons of Gabbran. Early on in Aedhen's reign, he saw Feirti de Beaton, ruler of the Dan Finn Ach in Ulster. Either he was forced to do so, or doing so gave him protection and a bit of breathing room after possibly just coming out of a dynastic dispute. Only when Beaton died in 581 did Aedhen become fully independent. However, that seemed not to matter to him, and Aedhen was expanding his power even before the death of his overlord. In 580, for example, Aedhen led a war fleet around the coast of Scotland and raided the Orkney Islands. This was a direct challenge to the Pictish overking, Brude, who you may remember as being the person who defeated Gabbran in battle. In 582, Aedhen invaded Stirlingshire and won a battle against the locals. His oppositions, the Maatae, were able to kill two of his sons, but they were nonetheless forced to swear fealty to Aedhen. In 590, Aedhen followed this up by invading Alclwyd. The annals record the third unrestrained rowding, in which Aedhen the Treacherous came into the court of Roderick Hale of Clyde Rock, and left neither food, nor drink, nor living beast. Roderick Hale, or Roderick the Generous, was king of Alclwyd at the time.
While Aedhen was growing in power, a new power was arising in Ireland, Aed Mac Aimrach, the High King of the Northern O'Neill. Aedhen, it seems, had held land in Irish Dariarta, a stretch of land along the northern coast of Ulster. In between the two monarchs lay the lands of the Dal Finn Ach, the tribe Aedhen had previously submitted to. Seeing the advantage in surrounding this powerful enemy, Aed invited Aedhen to a meeting to discuss the possibility of a military alliance. When this meeting took place is a bit of a mystery. It could have happened any time between 586 and 594. However, there's no evidence of it leading to anything of note. Aedhen had instead turned his forces on the Picts. Brude, the High King we've mentioned a few times, died in 584, leaving the floodgates open. Aedhen took advantage of this in typical warlord style. He raided. He raided lots. Eventually, he raided a bit too much and was defeated in battle. What's worse, he lost another two sons. After this defeat, Aedhen returned to Dariarta and was properly invaded Northumbria. This seems to have been the worst decision he could have possibly made. Northumbria was led by the powerful King Aethelfrith, and Aedhen had just been defeated in battle. In the end, it went about as well as you'd expect. Aedhen's army was utterly defeated, though Aedhen himself survived. This time, though, Aedhen didn't try to immediately invade a powerful neighbour and stay in Dariarta for the rest of his life.
Now let's talk a bit about Pictland, or more specifically, how Northumbria messed with Pictland. In 655, Bede records that Oswiu, king of Northumbria, subjugated the nation of the Picts, for the most part, to the rule of the English. This was on the back of defeating the last pagan monarch in England, Penda, so Oswiu was doing pretty good. It seems he imposed a Clark king over the Picts, a man by the name of Drust. On Oswiu's death, Drust tried to exert some form of independence. However, Oswiu's son, Ecgfrith, wasn't any less powerful than his father and was able to expel Drust from Pictland and give the throne to his kinsman, Bridie. Bridie, like Aidan, wasn't a lazy subject. In 682, he subjugated the Orkneys and generally seems to have asserted himself. There's evidence he even invaded Dalriada. In 685, Ecgfrith marched into northern Pictland. There are two options about why he did so. The first one is that Bridie rebelled, which is supported by the Bishop Wilfred recording, and I quote, "The bestial peoples of the Picts despised their subjugation by the Saxons, with a fierce disdain, and threatened to throw off from themselves the yoke of servitude." The other option is that Ecgfrith wanted to put the Picts in their place. No matter why he invaded, Ecgfrith invaded in force. However, he was ambushed and died along with most of his army. This disaster for Northumbria cemented Pictish power north of the Forth Clyde line, straight across Scotland from where it gets to its narrowest point. Bridie was now ruler of the Picts up until 693. Thank you all for listening. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. I think we covered some really interesting and fun topics. It's good to be back talking about battles and stuff, no matter how blurry or unbiased our sources are. Please remember to follow me on Twitter, where I'm at BritishHistPod, and join the community Discord server. I'll link both of those in the episode's description. Also, please consider making a monthly donation to the show via Patreon. It really helps me keep pumping out episodes. If you don't want to know every month, you can make a one-off donation via PayPal. I'll link both my PayPal and my Patreon in the description. If you want to support the show but can't or don't want to do so monetarily, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, or wherever else you can. These really help the show grow and keep me motivated. A big thank you to my $5 Old Woman tier patron, Emily Frias, and my two $10 patrons, Stephen Reinish and Anita Gardonu. With that, goodbye!